All right, we'll move on. Habitat Stamp 3-year plan. And we've got Ryan Wendinger and Jason Youngworth with us. Thank you both for being here. We have Jake there. All right, very good.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners and Secretary Rowling. Nick's working on the PowerPoint up here, but Brian Wendinger, Habitat Program Administrator here for the department. I'll be kind of doing a mixed presentation here with Jake Davis, our aquatic guy here. He'll let him introduce himself before we get started.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. Again, Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator. I'm pinch hitting for Jason this morning. And with that, Ryan, take it away.
You bet. Yeah, so just kind of review some of the history. Back in 2020, legislative session, Senate Bill 75 was passed, creating a habitat stamp, as you're all pretty well aware of that. And just kind of a brief overview of that. It generates about $5 million annually right now in the state. $10 stamp for residents and $25 for the non-resident folks who are buying licenses here. It's supposed to be put towards terrestrial and aquatic habitat and access projects across the state. And that's kind of just a brief history of it. So from that, we wanted to develop a plan. And the objective of that plan was to create a guiding document for the next 3 years to detail how these funds will be used under that Senate Bill 75. We want to take a strategic approach on how we're utilizing those funds going forward and also help with project planning as we go forward here, making sure that staff have a good idea what funds are available and how to put those to use as best as possible. So with that, next slide. Yeah, there you go. The plan itself is consisted of 8 parts, and I'm not going to dive into it and bore you guys with all the ins and outs of it, but want to hit on the highlights just for your guys' information and what we put together here. But yeah, it talks about the staffing of our habitat and access programs, project types, resources that we need, planning, project identification, how we're going to report these projects to the public and to the governor's office, things like that, some challenges that we may face along the way trying to implement all these projects. And then goals, objectives, strategies, and then some of our appendices really break down the financial plan of how we're going to implement these dollars that are coming in. So with that, next slide, please. So introduction is the first portion of the plan, and just want to touch on this a little bit. Passing of Senate Bill 75, revenue that's generated, we talked about that and how it's supposed to be split between aquatics and terrestrial. And then beyond that, in the introduction, we have some focus areas. And for the terrestrial side, habitat improvements on state-owned land and also access improvements on state-owned property. Outside of that, opening up private property for public hunting and fishing access is another key component on the terrestrial side. On the aquatic side, we have large-scale restorations as a focus area, small-scale habitat and access projects, also dam infrastructure improvements under the aquatics focus areas. So with that, I'll dive into the habitat and access project types on the terrestrial side. So you can see we have a pretty long list there of different things. And there's some things probably outside of this list that aren't really tied to the specific things listed here, but would fit into one of these to some degree, trying to narrow it down to these different categories. But some of the main ones, obviously, native grass and pollinator plantings, woody habitat plantings such as shelter belts, grassland and forest enhancement, things along those lines. Also an access component of creating waterfall access trails, and then access roads, getting people into these public areas to be able to utilize them. Grassland infrastructure there is really tied to grazing infrastructure to rotate cattle for grassland management, grassland health there. So some fencing, water resources, stuff along that line. On the access side of it, James River watershed prep is a big component. The Big Sioux River watershed prep obviously just launched here this fall and is a big component of that. Our walk-in area program, paying some incentives there for long-term contracts. And then also on our private lands habitat programs, we offer some increased cost share for those landowners who participate in those private land programs, but also open it up to access for hunting. So we give them a little bit of a bump there to implement some of those projects. With that, I'll turn it over to Jake, your first slide.
Thanks, Ryan. So just going to cover quickly some of the habitat and access projects that we work on the aquatic side. And we really have two categories, those that happen, public waters, and then also projects that on private lands and public waters that may exist on those private lands. But jumping on into our public waters, we have a number of different improvements that we do. One of the first ones is going to be infrastructure improvement. Now, we've got a lot of small impoundments, large impoundments across the state as well, and many of these are quite old. We're talking built in the 30s. And so with that, the infrastructure itself is really in need of some maintenance and improvements. And so on an annual basis, we've had some inspections that have happened and really working our way across the state to improve this infrastructure on these impoundments. We started in western South Dakota. We've got some going in central South Dakota and then on the eastern side as well. So that's a big thing for us is because these impoundments provide a lot of recreational opportunity, but they just need some attention. Just been a lot of deferred maintenance over the years, and now we can really do some improvements. Additionally, we do a lot of work on flowing waters. A lot of this work does happen in the Black Hills. The primary reason is that's where the majority of our sport fishing opportunities in flowing waters occurs. That being said, we have a lot of opportunities that we work on there in those watersheds of Black Hills, but there are some opportunities that we're exploring in other parts of the state as well. One of the other aspects that we can improve for aquatic habitat is through aeration. So what I mean by this is essentially going into what we would call a marginal water body that may have issues with dissolved oxygen. We can install some aerators and really provide some instant habitat improvements by simply stirring and mixing the water. We've got some projects going in central South Dakota where aeration has been a valuable tool for us. And again, something that we'll look to expand on across the state. Additionally, we can improve in-lake habitat through the installation of fish habitat structures. These can be natural or artificial. We can use cedar trees during our cedar removals to actually put in waters to create spawning habitat as well as juvenile and adult habitat. And then we have been installing artificial structures across the state as well in some of these standing waters. We also do a lot of aquatic access improvements on public waters. This can be anything from primitive launches for hand launch watercraft such as canoes and kayaks to large-scale boat ramp improvements. And then also some of the big things that we can do are fisheries renovations. Now, this would involve, say, a draining of a system, dredging, and then also maybe some in-lake habitat, but really a whole system renovation on an aging reservoir. Now, when we move to projects on private lands, we have a couple different avenues that we work on. One would be shoreline restorations. This is something that really occurs in, say, the eastern part of the state where we have lakeshore properties. We can work with lakeshore owners to transition from, say, a monoculture of just your typical bluegrass to a native mix. This helps with shoreline stabilization as well as water filtration. The interesting thing is when we work with a lake association, for example, if we're able to get just a few folks to buy into this process, it really gets the ball rolling and we're able to have a lot more engagement with our lakeshore owners. We've had some really good projects to highlight and really the pictures are great on this because, again, you go from, say, a manicured lawn to a native vegetation component and it's quite the stark contrast. So that's been a good one on private lands. Additionally, we do access agreements. So in cases like this, we might work with a private landowner to lease, say, 3 to 5 acres. And what we'll do then is install parking lot, fencing, signage, whatever it might be, but this will allow access to a public water. And so while the agreement itself may only be for a handful of acres, it may open up hundreds of acres of a water body. So this has been a really valuable tool when we work with private landowners to provide access to a public fishery.
All right, thanks, Jake. So next slide here is project identification and resource planning. So on the terrestrial side, back in 2018, for those of you who remember, we did a GBA assessment. We're planning to do that again here in 2023 and hopefully report that assessment to you guys later on here in the year. Hopefully we're just in the development stages of putting that assessment together for staff to take a look at every GBA across the state. So that's part of our how we're identifying these projects. Also, annually, our staff are doing evaluations of our cane production areas and coming up with management plans for the next year of things we want to do, but also beyond that for the next several years of things we need to plan for. So outside of that, we're also holding GPA meetings within each region with staff, whether it's a CO or whoever may be engaged in those conversations to share project ideas and come up with a laundry list of things that, hey, this is really going to move the needle on things we want to do on these properties. So that's on the terrestrial side, and I'll let you talk about aquatics.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So on the aquatic side, we've got staff located in all the different regions across the state. Those staff are identifying projects. They're going to be meeting with local regional staff as well as park staff to help identify projects. We also rely on a lot of these staff to help us implement these projects once they're identified. We also work with our staff that are constantly out in the field. We have field staff that are conducting standard lake surveys, and they're getting to these water bodies certainly more frequently than our habitat staff, so they're able to provide input and can really give us a good idea on where improvements can occur. Additionally, we have a lot of partner groups out there, whether they're angling groups or just interested citizens, lake associations, whatever it might be, and they're able to get in touch with our habitat biologists and identify areas that we can really do some good work as a partnership opportunity. And so, again, having these staff across the state, they're able to engage with internal and external partners and really get a lot of good things done.
So beyond that, resources and partnerships, these projects have involved a large range of resources and partnerships, different contractors across the state, conservation districts, habitat management companies. It's been a pretty broad range of different groups we've worked with, engineers, you name it. It's a pretty long list of people we're collaborating with and developing partnerships with to implement these different types of projects. And those conversations have obviously really spurred a lot of discussion amongst these groups and facilitated some really good collaboration and maybe other parts of what we do too. So beyond that, jump to the next slide here. So within the plan, we have some goals. A couple of the goals, I'll just read through them, but increase user opportunity and experience through enhancement of habitat and access, both terrestrial and aquatic, on and to public lands and waters, and by providing additional public access to private lands. And that goal there is really focused on our users, really getting them to the opportunities that are out there. Goal number two is focused more on the wildlife and the habitat side of things, and that's to increase and improve wildlife habitat to sustain healthy populations of game, non-game, and fish species for current and future generations. So I think those two goals that really hit on the intent of Senate Bill 75 and really drive home what we want to accomplish here. Outside of that, the next step is we develop some objectives for the terrestrial and aquatic side. We have 9 different objectives for the terrestrial side, 6 for aquatic. And then within each of those objectives, we really dove into things and kind of got in the weeds on, hey, these are the strategies that we're going to use to accomplish these objectives and overall meet our goals of what we've set up above there. So next slide, please. So I'll run through the terrestrial objectives here, and I'm not going to go into too deep depth, I guess, as well. But a lot of them kind of mirror some of the project types, but seeding native grass and pollinator plots, you know, increasing nesting habitat out there for pheasants, ducks, waterfowl, that sort of thing. Pollinator plots is good brood-rearing habitat for young pheasant chicks as well as other wildlife and pollinators. Woody habitat, winter survival, things like that. We're putting new shelter belts in places where it's needed and maybe renovating some old ones that are in need of redoing. Some food plot acres as well. Grassland and forest enhancement, doing quite a few acres of that. And that consists of, in a grassland setting, maybe removing some invasive species or species that we consider maybe not a benefit to the wildlife or the grassland ecosystem. In most cases, it's a woody type shrub or cedars, things like that, that may have an impact on songbirds and things of that nature in a grassland type setting. But in a forest setting, we're doing enhancements there where we're trying to promote regeneration of things like oaks and different desirable species and things like buckthorn, things like that, that may be invading some of these woodlands, trying to rejuvenate regenerate the species that we want there. So improve and develop road and trail access to some different GPAs, and that's really going back to getting people to these areas to be able to utilize them, improve and develop waterfall access sites, and primitive ramps, things like that, to get people on the water and allow them to hunt waterfall with a little bit of easier access, hauling gear, things like decoys and small boats can be a challenge sometimes in some of our properties. So that's where that objective is coming from. Objective 7 there is to improve and develop grassland management. We talked about that a little bit, create some infrastructure to increase grass management through grazing. And then beyond that, the last couple of objectives there really focus on the access component on private land. Obviously, we would really like to see our James River CREP reach 100,000 acre cap, and the Big Sioux River CREP reach its 25,000 acre cap that we currently have in place. Outside of that, we want to secure some multi-year walking area contracts through this objective here. We're basically paying bonuses to landowners who enroll in multi-year long-term contracts for the walking area program, lining those properties up for many years for our users in the future. So, next slide, please. So you've noticed probably in all these different objectives on the terrestrial side that as the time goes on here, 23, 24, 25, you see a decrease in acres as time goes, or decrease the number of projects or dollars spent on these types of things. If you look at that financial plan there, that's just kind of a ballpark. We tried to plan out as best we possibly can for the next 3 years based on what we predict revenue to be, things like that. You see a decrease there, but you also see an increase on the private land side. With the new CREP coming into play with the Big Sioux River watershed, that'll be increasing the dollars spent there, as well as the James River CREP. As we move towards that 100,000 acre goal, we'll be increasing the cost that we'll be putting towards those programs, as well as the walk-in area bonuses and some private lands habitat access incentives there. So we're just trying to lay out a plan that would be accustomed to what the revenues would actually be. And it's important to note that on the terrestrial side here, where we're talking game production areas, things like that, these things are above and beyond our normal operating procedures there, what we've done in the past. So it's not like we're not going to be doing projects and things at a large scale. We'll still be doing those local things that we've already done prior to Senate Bill 75. We'll just maybe have a reduced number of projects. And with this being 5 years in, by 2025, we're hoping a lot of those really big, big projects on GPAs, the low-hanging fruit, will have been accomplished and implemented, and we should see a large increase in the quality of habitat out there on some of those GPAs that maybe struggled a little bit initially. So, Jake, take over next, I believe.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So, just to cover some of the objectives on the aquatic side, and the first couple are really going to focus on access, getting people to these public fisheries. Our goal, the first one is going to be getting folks to urban and community waters. These are really important regional opportunities. Additionally, there's ways that we can partner with our R3 efforts to really get, say, that user group that we're targeting to these urban and community fisheries. They're very localized. And in a lot of cases, we can do some small things that improve the access and really allow for better fishing opportunities to these. But there are also a lot that occur outside of urban community, and we can improve these as well. So our goal is 3 urban community on an annual basis and 5 outside of that. A number of different ways that we can do this. The picture on this slide here shows one of these fishing piers that we're able to put different fisheries across the state. Excellent, because it gets people to the water again. So the first couple objectives, again, focusing on access to these public fisheries across the state. Next slide, please. The second kind of focus that we have, a couple objectives focusing on the habitat side of things. So on an annual basis, we want to improve habitat on these fisheries across the state. Because we have different varieties of whether standing or flowing waters, we have objectives split out for each of these. So when it comes to standing waters, we want to improve habitat on a minimum of 5. This can involve a number of different ways that we do this. As I mentioned before, some of the tools in our toolbox, if you will, aeration, installation of aquatic habitat. If you look down there, that individual waving his hand and smiling is actually our secretary helping install some fish habitat structures on Lake Campesca. So again, a number of different ways that we can do this on our standing waters. But again, we don't want to forget our flowing waters. So we have an objective split out looking at, again, primarily streams in the Black Hills that support fisheries. We have a minimum of 3 during the life of this plan. One of the reasons that it's not on an annual basis is there are some timelines that need to be taken into consideration with in-stream habitat work. Generally, it involves working with a lot of different partners and a lot of permitting and clearances. When we talk flowing waters, we start bringing in topics such as floodplain and things like that. So our goal is 3 in the life of this plan, again, just because of the extended timelines that happen. They're just a little bit more complex than, say, putting in lake habitat. And then additionally, we'd like to do 1 lake renovation in the life of this plan, and this would involve a complete renovation, which would involve draining, dredging in lake habitat, and really taking what we would consider an aging reservoir and giving it a big overhaul and rejuvenating that to a quality fishery. Again, just 1 during the life of this plan because very costly, a lot of clearances that need to happen, a lot of permitting and a lot of coordination. So with that, we have 1 listed for this plan. Next slide, please. And then again, as I mentioned before, that infrastructure, a lot of reservoirs, small impoundments across the state, a lot of these were built decades ago, say the 30s. And so with that infrastructure has suffered a lot from deferred maintenance. So we can go in and actually improve that infrastructure, whether that's replacement of a spillway, upgrade of a dam structure, whatever it might be. And when we talk habitat, one of the things that's very important to fish habitat is just keeping the water there. So when we look at improving really infrastructure and in our investment across the state, we can look at state-owned dams and find a lot of opportunity where we can go in and improve these. And again, this is going to be an annual effort. We have an inspection that's already occurred and identified what needs to happen. And so really it's just working into the finance side of things to budget for these dam infrastructure improvements as we work across really the landscape of South Dakota. So again, these are going to happen on an annual basis. Next slide, please. And when we look at the finances side on the aquatics, what you're going to see is we're anticipating an annual revenue generation of around 2.5 from the habitat stamp for aquatics. And so really what we budgeted for on the different, call it categories that we have established, is looking for a zero-based budget. So moving forward on an annual basis, we're looking to spend about $2.5 million, and the goal would be that as money is generated through the sale of habitat stamps, that we are on an annual basis effectively and efficiently putting that money into projects on the landscape that's going to benefit aquatic habitat and access. So what users are going to see, because we want to make sure that we're telling the tale of these habitat stamp dollars that are generated and that we are effectively and efficiently putting on the landscape. The way that we report this is a number of different ways. One way is through our website. We have where the money goes. We have a dashboard that's annually being or constantly being updated as new projects are brought online. Folks can see that projects are occurring all across South Dakota. We want to make sure that we hit every corner of South Dakota because that's where those sales are being generated from. And the nice thing is we have resources all the way across South Dakota that we can use these dollars on. So we have this dashboard that folks can see. Additionally, from a legislative side, on an annual basis, we give a report each year in the fall to the Government Operations and Audit Committee, where essentially we report on our accomplishments in a given year. Because this essentially was given to us from the legislature, we want to make sure that that oversight is being provided and that we are providing an update to them to, again, show that we are using these dollars the way that they were intended. Additionally, we also have our social media platforms. It's really nice when we can put a Facebook post when we've accomplished a project very timely, whether it's a pollinator plot or whether it's a fishing pier, we can distribute that to our users instantly. And we've generated some really good feedback on our Facebook post, for example, because folks can instantly see that dollar that they are putting in for habitat stamps is being used for something that they can see is tangible that they can use. Additionally, we want to highlight these by putting signs at specific locations. So when we've accomplished the project using habitat stamp dollars, We're going to put this habitat stamp sign that you see here in the bottom right of the slide. Again, that's just simply letting folks know that those are those dollars at work on the ground. And with the generation of these funds, we are able to increase the number and the quality of the projects. We really want to highlight that and let people know that, again, these projects are happening and are occurring and they can see it. So those are the ways that we try and highlight what's being done within this program and really get that word out to the users and also the legislature as well. And with that, Ryan and I will stand by and be happy to take any questions.
Excellent. Any questions from the commissioners? I have a couple. I'll start with you, Ryan. You were talking about the GPA assessment plan for 2023. Has it been determined exactly where? Or?
Yeah, so, Madam Chair, the GPA assessment will be conducted by each region, by the staff who operate those public lands. We'll go through each different game production area, do an assessment like we did in 2018, look at the different things that they could possibly do, provide a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10 of, hey, this area is really looking sharp, it's maybe a 9 or 10, or and maybe we got some work to do yet, maybe it ranks on a 5 or 6. And then within that, they'll identify some different projects that they could potentially move that needle closer to a 10. So.
Thank you for clarifying that for me. Jake, I'm going to come to you. Just a couple questions about the objectives, the aquatic objectives. Improving aquatic habitat for standing water for five locations. Is there a list that you're looking to consider for these five, or how will you determine this?
Sure, Madam Chair. In a lot of cases, it's going to be through those discussions with management staff, but also our external partners. And it is somewhat hard to predict because with the generation of these funds, what we're finding is that different groups are finding out about this and reaching out and contacting our staff, and it's hard to predict that. One good example would be the town of Madison. That's a recent discussion that's happened, and so we're very happy to partner with that municipality, and we're going to have more of those requests in the future. We just don't always know. So we do have some projects that are identified, say, for 2023, but we really don't know for, say, 2024 yet because we may not have reached out to a certain community or they haven't reached out to us yet. So again, to see a list, we could probably provide what we have in the works right now, but that is constantly evolving and likely to change in coming years.
Thank you. And well, the next question is about the lake renovation, and maybe the answer is kind of the same. How will you determine this? And I know you have got a couple more years to do it, but how do you determine it?
Sure. Madam Chair, that's one that, in this case here, we think we have identified it. We're looking at Stockade Reservoir in the Black Hills. And one of the reasons that we're doing this is the proximity to Custer State Park. We know we're going to get a lot of use out there. Additionally, that reservoir does suffer from poor water quality. And we do have some issues with, say, algae blooms and fish kills. And so we think that's a really good location to focus on a large lake renovation just because it is so close to the crown jewel of our state parks, high usage, and really a good high-profile system.
All right, very good. Any other questions? We'll go with Commissioner Spring.
I was just wondering how the money is divided up with this habitat stamp. Is, you have the wildlife and then the fisheries. Is it as it's bought for a fishing license, or is it just thrown in a pot and divided? How does that work?
So Commissioner Spring, it is separated out based on the license type. So if you were to buy a fishing license and you paid your $10, that $10 would go directly towards aquatic. If you bought a combination license, those dollars would be split 50-50 between terrestrial and aquatic, and the same with a 200-mark pheasant license. Perhaps you paid a $10 fee for that, it would go towards terrestrial habitat. So it is broken out by license type.
Thank you for that.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, thank you. Great job on the walk-in areas. I mean, it's you supply the maps and folks can go out and see the signage, and they know exactly where they can go and enjoy the those public accessible lands. It's it works really well. I see a lot of folks using that. But one of the things talked about yesterday with the Conservation Reserve Program is that it would be against the contract to allow a parking area in there. I mean, you can't have road activities. You can't allow people to drive. There's just certain limitations. But with that, just kind of curious, and I don't expect you to know the answer on this one because you know this has been going on for many years, but possibly could we get kind of an agreement for like a tenth of an acre and an approach so folks can pull in with their truck, open the tailgate, let the dogs out. You know, it's kind of a big thing to see at the end of the hunt, especially, you know, you get the hunting dogs, you water them, you know, you kind of need an area to spread out. And unfortunately, when that happens on the edge of a gravel road, it's not safe. It's not safe for the folks doing it. Anyway, if there's any ability to work that out, like we, you know, GPA, for example, we've got designated parking areas and we provide for folks. But anyway, just a thing to get those vehicles off those gravel roads during harvest would be a boon for everybody, I think.
Madam Chair, yeah, I 100% agree. And we constantly are working with different neighborhoods, things like that, where we have a neighborhood that says, hey, we got a lot of hunters parking on the road. Is there anything you guys can do? And there's some walking areas that maybe aren't in any type of easement or program that maybe allows some parking areas to be cut or things like that. And maybe the landowner's willing to swing in there and cut out a little spot for people to park. And sometimes it's just simply mowing an approach for people to park just to at least get them off the main gravel road. And that's like you said, it's kind of an ongoing thing and something we're always, whether it's a conservation officer or regional staff, working with different areas and when those issues become a problem. Yeah, I totally agree. There's opportunity to improve those types of things. So,
okay, yeah, thank you. Just,
you bet.
Curious what the history was on that.
You bet.
Yep, Commissioner Bartley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Bartley. Ryan, can you tell me, with the habitat funds, are any of those funds allowed to be used for, like in the game production areas, for noxious weed control? Or do you do that just with the main budgetary funds?
Commissioner Bartling. Yeah, the funds that we've used for noxious weed control have been regional funds that have not been used. We haven't used habitat stamps to do that sort of thing. You know, that's one of our top priorities in each region, is noxious weed control. And we have funds regionally to do that, and that hasn't been an issue. So, yep, you bet.
Any other questions? No? Very well done to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great.